Hello. My name is Leroy Chatfield, director of the Farm Worker Movement Documentation Project. And today is Thursday, June 25th, 2009. This is another in a series of oral history interviews with those who lived in the Central Valley of California during the Delano grape strike and who supported the farm worker movement. Today's guests are the Reverend Chris Hartmeyer and the Reverend Bill Dew. This interview can be found on the Farm Worker Documentation Project website, www.farmworkermovement.us, in the oral history section. Before we begin, I would like to ask each of our guests to state their name, their current occupation, and explain their professional career status when the Delano grape strike began in 1965. And as a second part of the introductory question, I ask each of our guests to briefly describe their first encounter with Cesar Chavez, and what was their first impression? Chris Hartmeyer, let us start with you.
Yes, my name is Wayne Chris Hartmeyer. I am currently a retired Presbyterian minister living in Claremont, California. And at the time of the Delano grape strike, I was the director of the California Migrant Ministry.
And your first meeting with Cesar Chavez?
Was in October of 1961, right after I arrived in California to take on the job of director of the California Migrant Ministry. My predecessor, Doug Still, had given me a list of key church people to meet and have personal meetings with, and but at the top of the list was Cesar Chavez and Fred Ross. So I arranged a meeting with the two of them in a little cafe in East L.A. And I was young. I was inexperienced. I was probably nervous. I don't remember a whole lot except that they were both very, very cordial and very interested in where I had been and what I would have been doing, and then opened themselves up to my coming to CSO board meetings and CSO conventions and any other way participating in what the community service organization was doing at the time.
Okay. And Bill, what about you?
My name is William Bill Dew. I was appointed pastor of the Lindsay Methodist Church in July of 1964. Lindsay is in Tulare County, the county north of Kern County. I served in Lindsay from 64 to 67 and moved then to Clovis Methodist Church, which was on the east side of Fresno, California, from 67 to 72. And then beyond that, I went from there to Berkeley, California, to serve a Methodist church in Berkeley for 7 years. I was appointed a superintendent in the United Methodist structure in 79, returned to the pastorate in an East Bay congregation, and was elected bishop in 1988. I served as a bishop for 8 years in Oregon, Idaho, and Alaska, and then was assigned to Phoenix, Arizona, and served 8 years as a bishop of all of Arizona and the southern part of Nevada, and retired in 2004 and moved back to California, now residing in Elk Grove. I remember meeting Cesar first as a member of the audience where he was speaking at a CSO gathering in Fresno, California. I can't recall the date, but I can remember listening to him and being impressed with his demeanor, which seemed to me to have a special charisma of clarity and humility. I did get to meet him then down in Delano, and the shortly after the grape strike work began by the National Farm Worker Movement, and then my relationship with meeting Chris and other members of the California Migrant Ministry. I remember visiting Caesar once when he was in a was in bed because of not feeling well at all, and we went to see him one at a time, and I had a prayer with him in his bedroom, and had that same feeling that this was a very strong, very humble, serene in his heart kind of man who cared deeply for his fellow man.
Thank you very much, Bill. The opening topic for today's interview and discussion will be the relationship between mainline churches and their pastors in the Central Valley of California as it relates to Cesar Chavez and his farmworker movement, especially the Delano grape strike, which began in 1965 and lasted until 1970. One of the issues, as I view it, is this. On the one hand, the growers and the agribusiness community were longtime active members, elders, and benefactors of these Central Valley mainline churches, and were very much opposed to the unionization of farm workers and their right to bargain collectively. But at the same time, especially at the national level, these same churches held that the principles of social justice upheld these very same rights for farm workers. If I have stated the case fairly, it seems to me that pastors were drawn into the controversy surrounding the Delano grape strike, whether they wanted to be or not. So, Chris Hartmeyer, let's begin with you. How would you describe the issues confronting these churches and their pastors as it related to the farm worker movement?
Close to impossible. It seemed to me it was extremely difficult and actually rare for a pastor to survive in the Central Valley while supporting either the migrant ministries, the California Migrant Ministry, or the United Farm Workers, or the grape strike. So I can't even imagine what it was like in a parish where probably the most influential and wealthiest members, and maybe those whose families had built the church and whose children were populating the Sunday school. I just can't imagine what it was like when growers were so prominent in the church and this extremely controversial struggle was going on. Of course, it started slowly, but it gathered momentum as the growers began to figure out that the churches were involved through the California Migrant Ministry in supporting Cesar Chavez.
Bill, how were on the ground there? How do you view it?
Well, I think Chris described it very well. I do recall hearing colleague pastors speak about it with a lot of fear and trembling, I would say, that the grape strike and the farm worker movement was, as many of them would say, tearing our churches apart. And there were some who also seemed to need to have conversations with each other and myself included, to try to have some sense of balance and how to be able to continue to minister under those kind of conditions of people in their congregations being angry and upset and wanting to say very negative things about the work of Cesar Chavez and the farm worker movement. I personally was able, because I think of our United Methodist connectional structure, to survive, because the local congregation does not have autonomy to vote the issue as to whether a pastor remains or not. In our system, I was appointed by the bishop. And early on, I wrote a long letter to the bishop of the area. He had his office in San Francisco, and explained to him my stance and how I was going to be supportive. And I got a supportive letter back from him. I wanted to be clear that the issue was a part of our own social stance as United Methodists. And I also used the Book of Discipline, which is our guideline book for not only structure of the church, but many of our social issues, as well as other things. And at a particular meeting of our congregational governing board, I read from that Book of Discipline, which supported the collective bargaining, and stated that there was a motion that evening at a board meeting of my church in Lindsay to go against a resolution worded by a layman to be non-supportive of the work that was going on in Delano. And I stated that the Book of Discipline had this statement about supportive collective bargaining, and that was what was going on, that the people needed to understand that the workers had that right, and that we as United Methodists supported that right. The vote in the resolution overwhelmingly supported it, were, as I remember it, about 14 or 15 people voted for it, and about three or four voted with the position I stated. So that's kind of the way one experienced it. And in my own experience, however, I worked very hard on personal relationships, and I probably had been doing that even before all the turmoil began, with each of these persons, so that they were dealing with me personally in a way that made them have to re-examine what was going on in their own conscience and mind.
Bill, do you remember when that resolution came before your governing board?
Yeah, I would say that was in the probably the fall of 66. I remember It was September, wasn't it, of 65 when the whole thing started.
Yeah.
And so it was like a year later in the fall of 66, I would guess.
And where did that resolution go?
It didn't go anywhere except it was a
local.
That was what was interesting. It was simply the layman tried to get something going out of it. He got support from the people vocally, or they said yes, but they didn't really go with it anywhere. There was another man in that congregation whom I helped become more active in the United Methodist Structure annual meeting up in Stockton, California, named Neil Barker. I don't know if you remember him, Chris, but
I do.
I do.
I couldn't have said his name, but
yeah, he was a more level-headed. He didn't support Cesar Chavez and the farm worker movement, but he was much more level-headed, much more able to understand why there would be differences of opinion about that.
Was there a difference between supporting the California Migrant Ministries' involvement in Delano or supporting the strike itself? Or was it all one thing?
It was difficult for it started. I remember talking about the California Migrant Ministry because I remember telling people that the day of mandate ministries like summertime vacation Bible schools at the migrant workers' camps was over, and that there was a new sensitivity to, and I would often tie it to the civil rights struggle that was going on at the same time in the South, and say that this was our California movement that we needed to pay attention to, and that it was a new day, and that what was going on was the allegiance from the migrant ministry to support what the farm workers wanted to happen in their lives. But it was all kind of put together that way then in people's minds. And when they found out that, I guess one of the real tough struggles would develop around money, when they learned that there was money in our apportionments, which we called our benevolent giving, that would go to our national offices, included support for the National Council of Churches, which was the supportive structure for the migrant ministry, that would make them angry, and they would, you can remember yourself, I'm sure, how they'd want to find out, well, just how much money did we send to support that?
And some growers found out from their local churches that it was in the area of mills, not pennies.
That's right.
Mills.
It was less than 10 cents. Yes.
And the growers quite rightly said, it doesn't matter. It's the principle.
That's right. That's what they would say. Yes.
Bill, do you remember that gathering at Jim Drake's house in Goshen of a group a group of clergy who were seeking to support the migrant ministry?
Yes. Yes, I do remember that.
What do you remember about it? And do you remember who else was involved of the clergy?
Well, that'd be hard for me to remember who was there.
How about that? There was a Disciples of Christ minister in Visalia?
I think that's right, but I don't remember his name.
Yeah, I don't remember his name either.
Was Jean Batuier around there at that time? I don't know. Remember if Eugene was there. And there was a UCC pastor in Fresno at some point that was very supportive.
Henry Hayden?
No, he was an older person. The one I'm talking about was a younger guy I can't remember. His uncle was up here at the Piedmont Church in Oakland. You remember who I'm talking about?
Winthrop Yinger.
That's it, Yinger. He was very supportive. I don't recall him.
He had left the Arvin Church over this issue.
Okay.
Because his board of trustees had told him basically he couldn't pray for the strikers in his prayers. And that kind of was like a revelation to him, and he resigned that same week. Yes. But then he went to Fresno as the Council of Churches executive, and that's probably how he got
the Goshen
meeting.
What I remember in the Goshen meeting was that the fear that was expressed by pastors, they didn't use that word, but it was like, what were they really going to be able to do? Because the congregations were so so powerful in grower sentiment. But I can't recall particular persons. But I do remember that meeting because it was in a building just off the highway there in Goshen.
I think it was Jim. I think it was Jim and Susan Drake's house, actually, but I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Phil Farnham might have been there.
Yes, that's right. Phil Farnham.
Do you remember? Yes. Do you remember Jim's comment during this meeting as the pastors were agonizing about their situation, and I was kind of helping him talk about it and empathizing with him, and then Jim got exasperated.
Yes, he would.
And he said, "What are you all so afraid of?" He said, "I mean, it's only your jobs."
That's right.
He says, "You know how many farm workers have given up their jobs in Toledo? And they're poor people."
Right.
Oh, it was kind of like a, oh, wait a minute. It was like a moment of clarity.
Yes, that's right. I do. Well, Jim, I remember Jim being that way.
Yeah. Very to the point. No messing around.
Yes.
And do you remember the Delano pastor, Bill Edgar Manners?
I do remember him. Yeah. Yeah.
Because he wasn't in the class of struggling to figure out what to do.
That's right. He was frightened and he wasn't sure what could be done. And
he chose to support the growers publicly.
Yes, basically.
And to attack the California Migrant Ministry.
Yes. Yes.
Was that the most common sentiment of the Valley churches, Chris? Pastors openly supporting the growers and taking their side?
Not openly. Manhurst was kind of unique in that he talked to the media and he attacked the migrant ministry, and that was most of the pastors who survived. Were quietly, on the side of the growers. They wouldn't take a position one way or another publicly, but they would sympathize with the plight of the growers and what was going on, and agonizing about this strange role that the church seemed to be taking in Delano, supporting one side of a conflict against another side. So. But it was rare for them to come out publicly. And now the bishop, the Catholic bishop of Fresno, had no problem, speaking out against any Catholics that showed up in Delano. But that kind of public statement was pretty rare.
I can remember, Chris, you organized a group of us that when Roger Mahoney was a Monsignor. And he was there, and Bob Brown was there, myself, and you, and I can't even remember. There was about eight of us. Do you remember that?
Were you in that first delegation? I mean, that was fairly early.
Yeah, it was very early, yes.
Was it December, or was it one of the delegations was in September, right after the strike, but another one was in December.
And mine was probably the December.
That was when Bob Brown came down.
Okay, I was in that one.
Who is Bob Brown?
Robert McAfee Brown, a well-known and highly respected Presbyterian theologian who at the time of the Delano Grave Strike was teaching at Stanford University in the religion department. And so happened was a friend of... ours, my wife and I, from Union Seminary days.
Well, this brings up the subject in my mind of these national religious leaders who came to Delano. How were these arrangements made? Why did they come? What was the purpose? And what impact, if any, might their presence coming to Delano have on the Central Valley churches?
I can answer part of that. Cesar Chavez and Jim Drake having been, was a migrant ministry staff person assigned to the Delano strike, Jim Drake and Caesar and I would talk about, how to build support for the strike. And one of the obvious ways was first to bring state church people down, which we did, including the Bishop of Stockton, Episcopal Bishop of Stockton, and then a national delegation in December, and I coordinated that out of the California Migrant Ministry office in Los Angeles, and invited just various people to come. And
like what kinds of people?
Staff people for the National Council of Churches, people with like urban and rural assignments in the denomination. There was a Methodist who came, Bill, a National Methodist person who came.
Do you remember, was it Grover Bagby?
It might have been. It might have been.
I do remember being contacted by Grover. He was with the, what we called then, Social Concerns, that is now called Church and Society. It's a,
yeah.
It's our board that's in Washington, D.C.
Yes, it might well have been Grover Bagby, and but there were other denominations involved also. And we had a Catholic priest from Chicago, a well-known priest from Chicago, and his associate came. And anyway, the idea was to get people representing national church bodies to come and see what was happening. And then to talk to the growers. Well, talk to the workers, of course, but also talk to the growers and encourage them to negotiate with the workers and then make a public statement when all was said and done. It was just part of the effort to make the strike more visible and put more out of Delano pressure on the growers. Because in Delano, the growers had all the power and in almost every area of life. And so the strike had to spread beyond Delano to become effective at all. And then what was the impact on the local churches? I imagine it was pretty annoying to some pastors. How about Bill? What about you?
Yes, they were the many people in local churches, including mine, felt that was an outside interference kind of in their way of thinking, and so they would complain about it. Some would even write letters protesting that they don't know what they're talking about because they're not local, and so. I did want to say, though, I feel like it's important that the animosity against the pastors was fueled by people in the grower establishment, especially the California Farm Bureau. I remember going to a meeting of congregations, large, it might have been in Lindsay at the Presbyterian Church, or in Visalia, either one. And the main speaker was the leader, whoever, whatever the title is, I don't remember. I think his name was Grant.
Alan Grant.
Alan Grant. Yeah, thanks, Chris. And he told that group that if their pastors were supporting the farm worker movement, that they either ought to leave their churches and find another church, or they ought to work to get rid of the pastor from their church. To me, that was a powerful thing for him to say right there, and hundreds of people were in that meeting. And just, but that's the way he felt, and others in that establishment that suggested that that's what ought to happen.
He was a very important, quote, Presbyterian layman who attended the church in Visalia.
Okay.
The Presbyterian Church.
That's probably where the meeting was, yeah.
And he, I don't know if you were there, but there was an occasion when Cesar Chavez and I were debating Alan Grant and some economist from Berkeley. And the church, they had to set up microphones outside. The church was full,
yeah,
overflowing.
Yeah.
And Alan Grant was the main spokesman for the growers.
Yeah.
He was the president of the California Farm Bureau.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. And it was, I would say that group was like 90% opposed to us, opposed to Caesar and myself.
That sounds about right, yes.
Bill, what a... Leroy, first, from my point of view, Bill was a one of the unique pastors in the Valley who was able to act on his conscience and survive. Most just kind of equivocated on the issue. Some had to leave their churches because they supported the migrant ministry or the strikers. But Bill was unique in having those strong pastoral relationships with even people who opposed him, so that he was able to stay there. And I hadn't even thought about the Methodist discipline being part of your survival, Bill.
Yeah.
Do you think they would have voted you out if you didn't have the discipline, the appointment system on your side?
It's possible that that would have been true, but I hadn't thought about that. But to me, that's what I said to my Methodist colleagues, that we stand on this. You ought to be able to just let that work for you.
But many of them had been convinced by their parishioners who were growers or close to growers, right, that Caesar was a communist. Caesar Chavez was a communist.
That was the line used, yes.
And the migrant ministry was meddling in things they didn't know anything about. And what were these young white, ministers doing supporting this communist in Delano? I mean, it's a pretty...
Yes.
It would be a pretty easy line to fall for if you were in that kind of a conflict situation in your church.
Yes. That was what they often would charge. I got a couple of phone calls from members of the congregation. I can remember one where there was never any threat, anything happening in Lindsay, because they were mostly all citrus fruit growers. And but he said, any of those... whatever he called him, using really harsh language, I'll blow their asses with my guns. I mean, that's how strong he spoke. This is just the way a pastor like me functioned. I get a phone call like that, I would hang up the phone and drive immediately to that person's house, knock on the door, and insist that we talk about it. And I never had any problem of being, physically attacked or anything. I do remember I'd be sitting down then with the person. I'd say, well, this is where we are on this. I consider myself your pastor. If something happens to one of your children or your wife, you can expect that I'll be here unless you say otherwise. And I did not hear them say that I had to be excluded or discontinued to be their pastor. I can remember one day riding all the way up and down rows and rows of sugar beets with a grower on a tractor, and going into his house with him, and he goes over and picks up his books and opens them up and points to them, and he's wanting me to look at what he's paying the workers that work for him. And I can remember saying to him, Ralph, I'm not an expert on that. That's not the point. The point is that they ought to have the right to decide collectively some kind of agreement. He was very paternalistic and probably paid better than the average. He was the kind of grower that would provide a funeral expense for somebody who may have a lost member of their family. An older person might die and they didn't have the funds, and he would pay for it. And he would do that kind of thing in a kind of gracious way, but still was absolutely opposed to their right to organize.
Leroy, you get some sense of why Bill Dew was unique in this situation.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I just listen amazed here.
I can't imagine many many pastors in that situation, Bill, who would hang up the phone and drive right to the person's house.
Yeah, that's...
Most might go for a drive and try and forget the conversation.
Yes.
Well, what Bill, about... Do either of you remember any names of pastors who essentially it became so uncomfortable for them, it was made so uncomfortable for them that they just simply had to move on and moved away, so to speak?
Well, we've already talked about Winthrop Unger in Arvin, but also Jean Boutillier in Fresno, who was like an associate pastor of the First Congregational Church of Fresno, was persuaded to leave because of his support for the Delano grape strike. And,
I was thinking Bill, there was also a congregational or another, not a Methodist, but another one in Tulare. I was trying to think, I can't come up with any name, but there was somebody there who had to leave the congregation because he was supportive in the congregation. However, they had the authority to put him out.
They did have the authority. I wish I should remember that person's name. Wow. But anyway, can I skip subjects, Leroy?
Sure.
Bill, do you remember the Dave Havens and Jim Drake and later Gil Padilla participated in a community organization project in Porterville? With the full support of the Porterville Congregational Church, and the pastor whose name was maybe Hazen, and then this little community organization composed of farm workers decided to give support to a student who had been beaten up by a teacher in the Porterville High School.
Oh.
And also to help raise money for an attorney for this student who had been rather severely beaten by the teacher. And this was a farm worker's, child.
Yes.
And that event, totally raised the issue in the church of whether they should be involved in this kind of a thing. And the church had a congregational meeting and voted overwhelmingly to withdraw their funds from this project and to no longer support Jim Drake, who was a member of that congregation. Jim and Susan attended the Congregational Church of Porterville. So that just was like an eye-opening event for all of us, that when you support people who are poor in their struggles, that sometimes it becomes impossible for the middle-class side of the street to support that.
Well, as you started, I didn't remember it at all, but as you continued in telling it, I did recall the piece about Jim, and I do remember him telling me that story. He one Sunday morning he showed up just attending in the Lindsay Methodist Church. He was sitting in the congregation, he and his wife, and it might have been shortly after that because he might have told me that.
They no longer felt welcome in the Porterville Church. I mean, some people would have welcomed them, but they never felt welcome.
Doesn't the story that you just recounted about the Porterville incident, doesn't that speak to Bill Dew's opening statement, so to speak, where he talked about, compared the farm worker movement to the civil rights movement?
Right.
I mean, with the case that the incident you're talking about, it's not a labor issue. It's not a collective bargaining issue.
Nope.
It's a civil rights issue. It's a human issue. Bill, how do you see that?
It was a civil rights issue, exactly.
Yes.
But it was also an issue of supporting, you know, self-determination. This is what the community organization that had been formed wanted to do. And naturally, Jim and Dave were going to go along with that because they had helped organize this group, but the churches who had been supportive of it just completely pulled away. It was a little bit like what happened to churches when we supported the grape strike, right? Churches who had been collaborating with the migrant ministry in summer programs.
Yes.
As soon as it became visible that the migrant ministry was supporting Cesar Chavez and Delano, they just cut off all contact. Money, of course. Money was cut off first, and then all relationships ended.
I can recall. I served a church. I didn't say that before, but I served a church called Springville, which was up in the foothills on the east side of Porterville in 61 to 64. Okay. In 61 to 64. And in that church, any summer you could get lots of money in a small church, but as for an offering to help the migrant ministry in its summer program, there was no problem. The people were, oh yeah, we got to help those, especially those children there. The children of the migrants need to be cared for and by the church. And you're right, all that would happen, and every summer that program was supported until the California Migrant Ministry turned the corner and said, whatever the workers are going to decide is where our ministry is going to go.
You know, the civil rights issue, Leroy, raises something else. The civil rights movement as background to the Delano Grape Strike was very, very helpful to us, because national religious leaders who came to California to support the farm workers, and who were told, you know, you're carpetbaggers, what do you know, we're the local people, we know, they'd all been in the South and heard the same things from white church people in the South, saying, you know, what are you doing supporting these, you know, these upstart black people? We're the local church people in Mississippi and Alabama and South Carolina, and we know what's best for them. So they had already gone through that, kind of like being dismissed as outside agitators in the civil rights movement. So in Delano, and if they just, it was the same thing all over again. They knew immediately. Yeah, you say you know everything, but actually, you only know it from your side.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're to the point where I would like to begin to wind down the interview, but I guess what I'm thinking is, what I would like to ask is, now 40 years later, looking back on that tumultuous time, I'm talking about with the churches and the pastors and the grape strike, and what did anything, or what came out of that maelstrom, or did anything come out of it relating to the churches or pastors or religious thinking, or what is your take on that?
Well, one of the things that I reflect about is what I think of as the power of ideology, and how I believe I am who I am because of the power of the gospel as it addresses me from Scripture. And I would expect Christian people in our churches to have some understanding of that in themselves. But what I learned during that time was the ideology that also was gripping people's minds was more powerful. They had a particular worldview, a particular understanding of kind of laissez-faire their capitalism and other things that was even more powerful, and the church or Christ, being pretty presumptuous, but that was like the secondary rather than primary. It would take me longer to probably draw all that out, but that's a reflection I've had for all these years of how powerful that understanding of the world and the way things are did not seem to be able to be shaped by the gospel as we know it in Scripture as much as it was by other understandings of the world.
But, Bill, don't you think it's also because that powerful ideology was tied to people's actual financial well-being and the life that they were living?
Yes, I think you probably are absolutely correct. Has a lot to do with it in terms of, yes.
I always believed that it was people's economic self-interest that dominated any other view of this reality, of this struggle that was going on in Delano, and that they couldn't, except for very few, some did, God bless them, but except for very few, they couldn't tear themselves away from that, from their financial well-being. And my guess is the ideology is a kind of a rationalization of what is the basic issue.
Yes. And another thing, Leroy, try to put it this way. I served that church in those years in the early 60s, and it was 20 years later, a pastor was serving that church, and he saw me, and he said, "Bill, I've said this to other people, but I've never said it to you, and I ought to." He said, "When that church talks about its life and history, it refers to the time you were the pastor as that they were most involved in the mission and ministry of the church at that time. They talk about it as an exciting and important time in their history." He was honest enough to say that's what they would look back to. This was like in the early 80s that he's telling me this. I don't know how to help other pastors understand what that's all about, but
you should have said you should have been there.
Yeah, right.
Chris, could you wrap up our interview with your reflection about 40 years later, so to speak?
Well, it always surprised me at how long after, you know, the 60s, the bad feelings about the farm worker movement and the migrant ministry stayed. Clearly not with everyone, but they were there. But I think that the most lasting thing that came out of all that was, in our own way, small church-supported way, the churches helped the farm workers union survive in Delano and grow and win a big boycott. So I think despite all the controversy and despite all the terrible thing, you know, the difficult things going on inside of local churches, we somehow managed to help the farm workers survive in their strike and eventually win.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, with that, I would like to call the interview to a close, and I'd like to thank our guests today, Bill Due and Chris Hartmeyer, and I really appreciate your taking the time to discuss this. Hopefully in the future there will be people listening to this interview and who will benefit from it. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.